We will welcome Alicia Nice-Wander. She is the owner and founder of Mountain Vista Touring. She founded that business in 2004. Now, I ran into her on the trail several weeks ago when she was looking a little ragged, a little worse for the wear, but also with a smile on her face. She was completing what started to be an Everesting challenge, 29,029 vertical feet. But then she thought that might not be enough, so she did 37,000 vertical feet on her feet, both up and down. And now she's joining us to talk about what drives her and what she thinks about on the trail, how she nourishes herself, and then how she slows down to guide her clients in her guide business. So Alicia Nice-Wander, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hi, guys. Thanks.
Well, it's really fun to have you, and I've wanted to talk to you to find out what actually happened on that day. I think you were at about 34.
Find out if I live.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a low point, Lynn. I have to admit it. That was, you know, we always joke about peaks and valleys when we're doing these long adventures and endurance running, and that was definitely a valley.
I could tell. It was at the bottom of Deer Valley at Snow Park, but you were still smiling. You pulled that one off and chatted with us for a minute. So I'm curious. I know you're an ultra runner. You just completed the Squaw Peak 50 of last week or the week before. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a week and a half ago.
And you know, as we've said, that today we're talking to superhumans and ultra superhumans. You don't do this professionally, other than the fact that you are an adventure guide. So that is a profession. But this ultra running, you know, you're a mere mortal. Well, I don't know. I might question that, like the rest
totally.
Of us.
Totally.
Caveat.
Very mortal.
There's a disclaimer on this. Yeah.
Whereas our next guest, Brian Tolbert, actually gets paid to run. But we think it's really interesting to talk to both you and then someone like him to find out what drives you. What drives you?
For me, a lot of it is just, I mean, aside from the physical health aspect, really, it's the mental health aspect. I do not do well if I am not out moving around, pushing myself, either with clients, but a lot of times without clients. And a lot of times I just need to be out there alone. That's kind of how I work through a lot of my just mental anguish, if you will, as much as I can have in Park City. You know, I know my life is pretty charmed, but it just keeps me in a pretty solid mental state when I can do that. And I really feel like the best way you can know yourself is to just be completely emptied out. Like, just get to the bottom of all bottoms when you're out there alone, and you have to see how much further you can dig within yourself to accomplish whatever it is you're trying to do. Even if it's just get back to the car. You know, it's like, oh, sometimes you're way out there in the middle of nowhere and you run out of food or you run out of water, you take a wrong turn, and it's like, all right, what am I going to do? Am I going to give up, or am I going to figure it out and make it back? And I think a lot of that kind of just then trickles down into life when you're faced with tough situations. It's like, okay, I can do this. I've been here before. It looks a little different, but I can figure this out. You know, I'm resourceful. I can do it. So I guess that's kind of a long answer, but really it's a lot of it's mental. That's what drives me.
So you've mentioned in that you find this necessity to really get to know yourself in these low moments. And that's, it's a critical, it's almost like a need to get to know yourself by having these low moments. Why is that the case? I mean, because a lot of people, and especially in our culture nationally, is, you know, we avoid those. We do everything we can so that we don't get down to the bare bones. We don't get mentally naked in that sense. Why is that so important, and how will that translate into your life for you?
Well, I really feel like the only way you can lead a truly authentic life is to know yourself. And a lot of those moments are uncomfortable. But if you don't get to know yourself and you're not leading an authentic life, then you're essentially a fake. And who really wants to be a fake? You know, there were probably, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I wasn't at a great point in my life. And I just remember waking up, and it was right around the new year, and I don't make resolutions, but I decided to make a life change. And I just said, you know, from now on, I just want to feel it, whatever it is, good, bad, ugly, happy, sad. I want to feel it. And whatever it is, I feel like I need to tell somebody, I'm going to tell them. So I warned all my family. I warned my close friends. I said, look, guys, this is what I'm doing. From now on, if there's something going on, you're going to know about it. And if you ask me how I'm doing and I'm not doing well, you're going to know about it. So just be prepared. And I think that was kind of part of that. You know, by then, at that time, I had been running a lot and pushing myself a little bit more and kind of slowly getting more comfortable with the uncomfortable. And I like that feeling. And I like not knowing what's going to happen out there and just seeing what I'm capable of. And, you know, it's a very humbling experience almost every single time for me, because I go out with maybe one agenda or thinking I'm going to get a certain time at a race or an event or whatever. And there's a lot of times it doesn't happen, and that's okay. I mean, it's just the whole experience from start to end. And I think we lead very, very comfortable, cush lives in this town. And I mean, even with COVID, like, this is a pretty horrible experience. Everything is disrupted. But for me, I don't feel that it's been terribly uncomfortable other than just the unknown. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's just really important for me to continue to sort of push that limit and continue to get to know myself in that way. And I'm not sure if that fully answers your question, but
no, certainly
that's sort of why I do it.
Yeah, certainly. We all want to have that experience of just knowing ourselves and being comfortable in our own skin. And that just has that ever present knowledge of our current existence and our current emotions.
Yeah.
But contrasting that is, you set this lofty goal for 40,000 feet of vert, and that really can be quite overwhelming for anyone to start even the process of accepting that goal and then pursuing it. And I know, just, you know, when I do workouts, if I'm doing 10 repeats on a hill, it can feel like I'll never get to the end. How do you get through that process? There's some low moments in there, I'm sure. And how do you step to the next, you know, literally next step?
Well, this one was kind of unique. I was signed up for the Squaw Peak 50. And when COVID started happening, and as you know, probably almost every race was just getting canceled. So I'm like, well, I guess I won't be doing that race, so I should probably do something else. And one of my good guy friends, who's a very legit ultra runner, he said, hey, there's this vertical challenge put on by this professional runner and people from all over the world. You can kind of pick your distance or elevation gain. And he's like, I think I'm going to go for the single Everest over the course of a week. So I thought, okay, I can do that. That doesn't seem terribly daunting. You know, 7 days to do almost 30,000, if that's just what you're doing. And I wasn't really working a ton at the time. So I thought, okay, that's cool. So I did it, and I was feeling pretty good, and I still had 2 days left. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to set a new goal. I'm going to set a goal to 40, because then I have 2 days, essentially 11,000 feet. I can do that. And I was close, but my body just kind of, my feet were really hurting. And the hard part about this challenge is you had to do all the downhill as well. Whereas if you're running the actual Everesting challenge, which is doing that all in one push, 29,000 feet in one push, you don't have to run the downhill. You can have a lift assist. You can have a car shuttle, as long as you go right back to the bottom of the hill and climb it. So it was a little different in that sense, but, you know, I did have the course of a whole week to do it. And I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of at the point where I'm always trying to find some new challenge to push myself. Like, one day this winter, I was like, oh, I want to do 8,000 feet today. So I just went out and did like 7 laps on Iron Canyon just to do it, like just to work on that mental aspect of, well, the car's right there and I'm going to go back up. So it's kind of weird and, I'm sick, and people are always like, what are you training for? And honestly, my answer is just life. I'm just training for life, just to keep a positive attitude, just to keep myself grounded, and just to be ready to jump up. If someone's like, hey, you want to do this crazy adventure? I can be like, yeah, I think I'm ready for that, and just go do it. So,
if you're just joining us, our guest is Alicia Nice-Wonder, and she is the founder of Mountain Vista Touring. She's talking to us about her Everesting Challenge, where she actually surpassed 29,029 feet and went to 37,000 feet. That was over a week. And let's talk just about the nitty-gritty. I think a lot of people wonder about just the basics, like what do you eat? How do you hydrate yourself? What do you do for, you know, electrolytes and that sort of thing? Let's hear about that.
Well, I am plant-based, so that is vegan.
So no hamburgers.
A lot of people don't understand how that can work, but it's really not that difficult. A lot of times on the trail, I'll do like a peanut butter tortilla or almond butter tortilla or something like that. I like to eat crystallized ginger. That helps give a little sugar and also helps if you're getting kind of an upset stomach. I have these really good electrolyte sort of liquid shots by Science and Sport that are delicious and easy to put down. But, you know, plantain chips for salt, I like that. Sometimes I'll take some roasted potato pieces. Just kind of depends. But like for what I did with this last challenge, the Everesting Vertical Challenge thing, I usually had a car somewhere nearby. So I'd just bring a bunch of stuff where I could then go back to my car, fill up my water, chug some electrolyte drink, and see what I was hungry for or what sounded good and just throw that in my pack and go back up. So it really wasn't that difficult to navigate. Mm-hmm. I mean, these long races are a little harder because, as you guys know from all of your own races, the aid stations are pretty disgusting. And a lot of the food there is not, I mean, it's like a big bowl of pretzels and peanut butter and jelly squared sandwiches, which sometimes you want that. But, you know, a lot of times you just have your drop bag or your crew there with your own food, and you can kind of pick and choose what you want. Although this year at Squaw Peak, there was no crew allowed, so that was a little bit of a different experience.
Yeah, very challenging.
But yeah, I think it, you know, everybody kind of craves different stuff. Like, I know people that eat bacon on these long races. I don't know how that works out, but I think it's just sort of what your body knows what it needs, and you just kind of make sure you have that accessible.
So considering that you trust your body to tell you what it needs, and when I'm on these long endurance things, my body usually needs potato chips and Coca-Cola.
Uh-huh.
But no, I'm wondering, do you ever get calculated about, you know, protein, fat, carbs, and what percentages?
No.
Not at all. Okay.
And I am like the worst person for any of that. I don't think about that. And Pete, what you were saying with when you have to do 10 hill repeats, I can't imagine doing anything like that. I don't train specifically that way. And I don't necessarily eat for a certain number of calories or carb to fat ratio or anything like that. I just kind of see what I feel like doing or see what I feel like eating and do my best to have what I need.
Well, I certainly don't, and I enjoy bacon on the trails at mile 80. So,
uh-huh.
So
yeah.
The scientific aspect of everything is not initially replicated in my life. So
that kind of takes the fun out of it for me, and it just feels like there's all this pressure all of a sudden when you start having like a specific training plan of getting in so many miles or whatever it is, or certain things you have to eat, or how many calories did I get this hour? Like, oh man, that takes away from it for me.
But if fun is the part of this, how seriously can you have fun when you're suffering for 40,000 feet of vert? I mean, I'm asking on behalf of everybody who's listening. That's insane.
Well, that's over the course of a week. I mean, I want to make that very clear.
Still
this is
a week,
a one day event. But I don't know. I mean, you have to get, like, for me, it was a little challenging because there was still quite a bit of snow on the high peaks in the Cottonwoods where you can really get some vertical. So at the beginning of the week, I went down and did Olympus. I did the Grandeur yo-yo. That gave me about 10,000 in the first day. So I felt like I had a good, solid start. And then I was, again, I can't tell you how many laps I did up Iron Canyon. And then I was just walking straight up the steepest ski runs I could find and trying to slide down them and back and up and back and up. I mean, it's just, you have to get a little bit creative, but I think that for me is, that's part of the tough aspect is just keeping that mental state where it needs to be. And just the accomplishment at the end of the day, you log your stats into the computer and you kind of see where you stack up against 1,000 people across the world. I mean, there were 1,000 people that did this, so that was pretty cool. But I also have to say, Strava, there was a lot of discrepancy between my Garmin and my Strava.
Yeah.
And the first couple of days I used Garmin. So I think I technically could have gotten more vertical feet if I used Strava, but I didn't. I just kept with the Garmin.
So then I'm curious.
I know what. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't rely on Strava.
No.
So I'm curious. We were actually discussing this on a run. There was about 10 of us, all social distancing, trail running yesterday. And we were discussing this idea that I'm going to propose in just a bit. Where and how to get the best vert in Park City on trail for running. And it's people have come up with Pine Brook Road for road biking and Guardsman's Pass and Empire Pass for road biking. Where would you go in Park City if you needed to do this on trail as an Everesting for 24 hours or 36 hours, whatever it might be?
You know, I've thought of that. And so are you saying you'd have to do the downhill too or not?
Yeah, you would have to do the downhill. And you brought up Olympus and Grandeur. You know, those would be the best ones that I could think of, but they're on the front side. That's kind of, you know, you're losing some time and by driving there. So
yeah.
what would you pick here in Summit County?
Well, the neighborhood might kill me when I say this, but I think Iron Canyon's the best bang for your buck. Because if you go up to Mid Mountain, it's 1,125 feet in 1.25 miles. I mean, it's a lot of laps, but it's also few miles.
Right, right.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
But I was contemplating, once Deer Valley opens, going up and just seeing how many laps I could do on the Silver Lake Trail and then taking the chairlift down for the entire day and just see how that looks.
That's a more sophisticated way of what I did several years ago at the Wells Fargo building.
Yeah, take the elevator.
Well, we all live off, you know, we're learning as we go here.
Right, we get smarter as we get older.
Yes.
So, Alicia, let's talk for just a minute about your guide company, Mountain Vista Touring. And I know, obviously, you were closed during the months of COVID, but as you open back up, what are you finding that clients want? I mean, I see nothing but like ads on the TV for like everyone's going camping and everyone's doing these outdoor adventures because social distancing is made more possible and we have been at home. So we want to get out there and we're not flying, even though flying I think is probably really safe now. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of the push, is to get people outside. What are you seeing in terms of demand?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of my clientele are out of towners. And a lot of my summer clientele are corporate groups. And that was all canceled by mid-March for sure for the summer. So that's been a little bit, that was initially a little hard to swallow. But I have been getting some emails from return clients who are contemplating coming back in July and August for the summer, kind of wanting to know what's going on out here as far as how things seem to be, how trails seem to be and that sort of thing. And the other thing that makes my company a little bit different is it's all privately guided. So basically we are doing social distancing at all times because everybody in the group either has to be you know, if they're related through the corporate group, that's fine. But otherwise, everybody has to either be family or friends, which would mean that they're traveling here together anyway. Mm-hmm. So I guess we've been preparing for this our entire duration without even knowing. But I'm definitely looking to have a pretty slow summer, and I'm not going to let that deter me or get me down. I'm just going to keep doing what I can do and offering the skills that I have up to people that are feeling safe, that want to get out there, and giving them a great experience, because there are a lot of amazing places you can go in the local area where you're not going to have a ton of people. And I think it's just giving people that access and showing them where those places are and providing a safe experience for them where they can feel good about being outside and recreating.
Right. When you were speaking earlier about the mental health aspect of ultra running and doing the things that you do, on a smaller scale, how do you translate that to your clientele? And how do those clients kind of, it's like they must sort of know that they like to get outside and it makes them feel good. But, you know, what do people say on sort of that smaller, level than what you do with your running?
Well, I think part of the exhausting part of my job is not the physical, it's more of the mental and emotional that I give the clients. And I mean that in a good way, because I love it. That's what also keeps me there. But, a lot of people, I feel like I end up being the cheerleader. I end up like really meeting them where they're at. I always tell them, it doesn't matter if we go a mile or 10 miles, like this is about you. And I want you to feel comfortable and successful at the end of it. And probably 99% of the time they do. And they say, wow, I can't believe I did that. And once you kind of establish that comfort zone and that safety level with people, I mean, the things I have heard on the trail, I'm like, wow, I should get a life coaching degree, something. Like, I should charge extra for this, because it is kind of like a therapy session out there. And it's just really cool to see a lot of these clients come back year after year, and you can check in with them on certain things and just see. I have certain clients where I've seen their confidence go from nothing to, wow, did you see I just walked across this exposed trail and I didn't even freak out? It's just being able to provide people with a safe, empowering experience in nature, which is the whole goal. So then when somebody goes home, they can, they're having a bad day. They know that nature is a safe place for them to go work that out. And nature is always going to be there, and it's not going to be closed. And it can be a very safe experience. And that, to me, is the number one goal.
Alicia Nice Wonder is our guest. Her business is Mountain Vista Touring. You can find her at parkcityhiking.com. From mountain biking to hiking tours, bright moon night hikes, SUP tours, the craters, doing the crater soak, and seeing that over in Midway, and mountain hikes, gourmet picnics, lunches. It all sounds like a lot of fun. Alicia, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.